You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, we left our homes up in Bristol Bay for the waters of Miami shore. With a hippo at the helm and our severance pay, we fly the pirate flag once more. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate radio. Well, the ship is a wreck, shit stains the deck as Michael Hollow's fellas make more. And Billy is a worry that he's got the scurvy, cause Chris ate all the limes in store. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate radio. Now Roy is a chum when he's on the rum, he's the glue when we spring a leak. And Stu is a mess, he does less and less, and Greg's sounding worse each week. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we get wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. Pirate radio. Someone yelled ahoy, who the hell's cabin boy? Somebody named Tony, who knows? Once we got the skip, well, I mean jump ship, cause he knew we would sail to gold. Pirate radio with the ship and crew, we got wind in our sails and the sky is blue. There's a devil up our nose, so much work to do. For the Pirate Radio.
Ahoy, mateys! That's the evolution. It used to be, it's the shipping container. Rah, rah. Now it's ahoy, everyone. Ahoy. Is anyone going to talk back to me? Ahoy.
You started.
Ahoy.
Ahoy,
Chris. Thank you. Hi, guys.
You started during the break. You just went into the Zoom and you're like, what a day yesterday. That's all I got.
Oh, man. Do you disagree?
Yesterday
I thought
was a
about
day.
It, Dan. I thought about it. I was like, how can I know the crew's going to be looking to me to address on everything that took place yesterday. So I thought about it. I gathered myself. And that's what I came up with. What a day. Amanda Gorman, am I right?
Well, I heard you guys talking before the show thinking she was a little girl and then she's 23. And she's
Don't call her the youth poet, okay? I'm going to think she's young.
Well, I saw the coverage after. I didn't see the actual poem that everyone was moved by, but
you
I did.
You had it on mute?
I did see it. Hey, listen. Listen here, what a day. Unless you got something better than what a day, you need to not be making fun of me for a second so I can get us off the ground. I mean, as if you don't have anything better than Amanda Gorman, am I right? And what a day.
That was off-air banter. That was just, having a little convo with my friends.
Okay, well, tell the people. Tell the people then what it is that you thought about how impressed you were by a girl who was a woman who you thought was a girl, and the CNN people afterward were talking very poorly about how poetic she was, including one CNN person who felt the need to say, for no reason in particular, my alma mater, Harvard University, which should get you fired on the spot. Like, honest to God, when you're volunteering that and it doesn't have anything to do with what we're talking about.
I didn't see Pablo on the coverage.
I know yesterday was Biden's day, but I'm not going to lie. Midway through her speech, I was like, I'd vote for her, like, right now. Just take over.
You know what I noticed? I hadn't heard a poem in 4 years. Poetry itself as an art had been dead for 4 years.
What is deader at Le Batard Show? The poem or a movie that is a comedy? What is deader at Le Batard Show?
They can't make good comedies anymore because apparently, as a society, we couldn't make good comedies without offending people. So we'll circle back to making, like, transcendent generational comedies.
You guys help me with something because I'm the hope urinator, right? And yesterday was finally like, hey, look, this is what just happened yesterday. I understand you might think he's a mediocre politician.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Raptors' victory.
We can sit here and talk about whether or not we're looking at a situation where the best that America can do between Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden is somebody who's 78, and you're deathly afraid yesterday that he's going to fall down those steps. Like, you just don't want him to fall down. He's an old man. He shouldn't be walking down. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Le Batard Show. Should a 78-year-old person be walking down 100 flights of steps without a railing? Like, that seemed like a bad idea. Not QAnon, not an assassin or a sniper. Just if I were trying to draw it up, how do I harm today's president? Make him run or walk down 100 stairs.
I think I let go of any fears that he can't walk down a flight of stairs. I thought he had that one in the bag, but I was curious. What would happen, say, midway through, you had to stop the ceremony for some reason? Who's president at that point? There's this weird space when Donald Trump's plane, which is Air Force One, while it's in the air, but when it lands, it ceases being Air Force One. And before he gets sworn in on a thick-ass Bible, like, who's really in charge? I was a little confused. I think we all were, and I'm just very happy nothing, like, important happened.
There was also a brief time when Kamala was the vice president and Biden wasn't yet the president. And I'm thinking to myself, what if, like, something happens right now?
Kamala, we need to start getting that right. All right. We need to not get that wrong
she corrects
anymore.
People.
Okay. We need to stop getting that one wrong. I'm guilty of it. It happened to me on air. But I would say that yesterday does absolutely get what a day. And the reason it gets what a day is for this lowered standard. The new president didn't die. And he should have run on a platform of, I'm just not an asshole. What you're going to vote for is just not an asshole. Like, we could sit here and talk about how great his speech was or wasn't. There were commentators who were talking about how they heard the echoes of, he's calling me a white supremacist in that speech. And what I would say to that commentator and anyone saying that is, well, if the hood fits. Like, I don't understand how you heard that. Everyone, no matter what your confirmation bias is, you can't hear that and hear much of anything other than a moderate sitting there trying to talk about unity. And now talking about unity is the new controversy because we've moved so far into wherever it is we've moved to with the hatreds and divisions in this country. Stugatz, how you doing? Good to see you.
I'm doing okay, Dan. Good to see you. It was a day yesterday.
What a day.
Big day. Yep. Full slate of NBA action. How about that? A little Wednesday.
I mean, America might be back, but so is Kendrick Nunn.
Are you worried about the Heat, Mike?
No, I was a little worried. See, it's a 72 regular season game, so a lot of people on Heat Twitter were like, oh, this is not a big deal. Jimmy Butler has COVID, right? This is not a big deal that we're dropping these games. They had this weird situation where win one, drop one, win one, drop one, win one, drop one. Then the refs absolutely screw them out of an amazing Heat culture win at Philadelphia. That game was crazy. I wish we would have talked about it because now it feels like it happened 2 weeks ago.
It was so great. It's just Tyler Hero with no they were undermanned. Go, and you are being made crazy. At this point, Philadelphia is a legitimate rival, right?
Where
you've been laughing at them for 2 years, but now they got Morey and they're going to be better, or you still don't think they're going to be better?
Well, they're definitely better. Morey will help make that team. I don't think their ceiling is a championship team, and I like that they're playing a little bit better because as fun as it was dunking on them and their stupid fan base all year last year, hey, you know, there's a real rivalry there, and there has been. Remember, they played in the first round a couple of years ago. So I like that Philadelphia is important, but I wanted that win so bad. Can you imagine Gabe Vincent and seven other players beating Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, who was terrible that game? And the refs totally screwed them. Totally screwed them. And this wasn't just Joel Embiid flopping. That carry at the end was egregious. They even review it, and they can't review everything, which is like the NFL, which is kind of stupid. So they're just reviewing the blocking foul, and the referee that calls a blocking foul that very clearly sees Joel Embiid carried, he's got to feel like shit in that moment, right? Because
they
can't
never
go back
call carries play. Though carries never get called.
No, it's a damn shame, because James Harden, every time he comes down the court, carries. But I wanted that win. They don't get that win. Then they go on this skid because there's no Jimmy Butler. Bam Adebayo misses a couple of other games. Now Tyler Hero is out, but they've won two in a row. That was a huge win. You know, it's whenever you go into Tampa, it's a difficult proposition. And the Miami Heat are a game out from 500. As good as Philadelphia has been, they're in first place. Miami Heat are just three games back. But the Miami Heat needed to correct it quicker because there's only 72 games this regular season.
Heat Twitter needs to relax, though. Mike has a good perspective on it. Like, I could make the argument this has been a great start to the Heat season with Jimmy Butler being out. Bam was out a couple games. Tyler Hero, Goran, they've all been out for parts of the season. 6-7, it's a good start. It's fine. Relax, Heat Twitter.
Well, let me ask a larger question about the Heat in general, because it was interesting last night, and this one's going to be so fun to watch. It's not just that you've got a team of trolls. It's not just that after a decade of player empowerment, you've got three unlikable kinds of players on the same team. It's that the Nets win two games when it's Harden and Durant, and then Kyrie comes back and they lose to Cleveland. And to me, you're talking about in the Nets, you're talking about the top of the food chain in that conference, but it can, in terms of just talent, I don't think no one can dispute this, correct? It can be said, no matter what you think, that the team with the most talent in the East is, period. It's the Nets, and that's it. And second place isn't particularly close.
Dan, in the NBA, you can make that argument. I mean, they have James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Kevin Durant. Not just the East. They have the most talent in the NBA.
Okay, so they lose yesterday, though, as soon as he comes back, and that's what you're kind of rooting for if you're anyone else in the conference, because the conference got better. Philadelphia is better. I don't expect Boston to stay the same. I told you this already. That when all the moves of the short offseason happened, the Heat looked and were like, okay, do we know the Celtics got better? Do we know the Raptors got better? Do we know the Sixers got better? Yeah, probably, maybe, but we know the Lakers got better. That's the standard.
Yes.
That's the team that ended your season. And Charles Barkley is out here saying, and this is a lot of people believe this about Miami, that it was a pandemic fluke, that they'll never get back there again. And I like that I heard the other day somebody sent us the clip of Charles saying on one of the highlight shows, speaking of someone you're never going to see again from Miami, Dan Le Batard and his fat daddy, his fat, ugly daddy.
I think it's fair to say that Miami also got better, being that Bam and Tyler Hero are expected to improve. And you saw that before the injury to Tyler Hero. He was starting to improve and be the guy that you were, you know, scared to trade for the likes of James Harden, given that he just turned 21. The additions of Avery Bradley, who you haven't seen because of COVID protocols. Precious has been an absolute monster. They nailed that draft pick. Anytime you can get that contribution immediately from that spot in the first round,
you nailed
it.
They knew it, too. Yeah. They, as soon as they signed that dude, they were like, okay, we can build around this. And we trust them just because of what they just did with Bam and Hero.
Mike, don't the Sixers scare you a little bit, though? Because Horford was not a good fit. They got rid of him. They brought in Danny Green. They needed some three-point.
Asking me if Danny Green scares me. Danny Green missed 80 straight shots, and he did in that NBA Finals. And I'm always going to be terrified of Danny Green. Yeah, the right. Sixers have improved. I also think the Miami Heat have improved, and we haven't really seen that improvement because the team hasn't been fully constructed yet this season outside of one or two games. But the Miami Heat, and as reports have backed this up, are seriously interested in what I believe is the game's leading scorer right now. I have to check. I haven't checked in a couple days. But Bradley Beal is the NBA's leading scorer last I checked, and he would make an immediate impact to this team and I think make them conference favorites.
And what do you have to give up for him? And what
I'm really happy Nunn is playing better.
Well, what are you willing to give up to for him? Because that one, you're not. It's going to be the same kind of discussion you had about Harden, except the guy who fits better with the culture, even though plenty of people are going to question how good he is because he hasn't been able to make a terrible franchise and a terrible team any good. And that was John Wall's team before he got hurt. And
can we get him without clearing Tyler here, without getting rid of here, though?
Well, but this is what I'm asking you, right? You guys want to get these guys for nothing. That's been the modus operandi of Heat sports fan, sports radio, Twitter since I've known it to exist. Yeah, let's get Bradley Beal. Let's get Bradley Beal for Olynyk. Can we make that happen?
And
everyone's
Olynyk
like
and
good with
Olynyk
it.
And
I was thinking Nunn and Vincent. How about that?
No, you want to trade him for Nunn, but not Kendrick.
I think you're going to need to trade Tyler Hero to get Bradley Beal, just like you would have had to trade Tyler Hero to get James Harden. For Heat fans, it was, do I want to trade Tyler Hero for what everything is when I trade for a James Harden? Culturally, does this guy fit? Udonis Haslam did a very interesting interview with Complex Sports where he's like, I can't be that guy's OG. I would have aged 15 years if James Harden was on this team. Culturally, right. James Harden very clearly wasn't as much of a fit as Bradley Beal would be. I've always been on the bandwagon, even though James Harden, historically, grand scheme of things, is always going to be remembered as a better player than Bradley Beal. I think Bradley Beal, you can make the argument, is a better player for this Miami Heat team.
He's averaging 35 points a game.
Insane.
That's insane.
What's his efficiency? How is his true shooting percentage? How efficiently is he going about it? Because they don't have, like, go ahead and have at it, shipping container. Go ahead, who you believe to be the second best wizard. You can all have at that question if you want to go ahead.
In history?
No, right now.
Westbrook.
Okay,
yeah,
third. Yeah, excuse Russ. Me. My bad. Sir, I forgot that he was there. That's my bad. Third. Who's third? That's legitimately me falling behind very quickly. Oh, yeah, Westbrook's there. Okay, they're still terrible, but they're Westbrook's there.
I was going to say Merlin.
Third? Anyone else?
It's an actual wizard, too.
I don't know if I can name a third.
That got me. I was like, who the hell's Merlin?
I've been hearing about Bradley Beal to the Heat for 4.5 years already. Riley, get the deal done. There's enough with Beal.
Talking about Precious before, when did the Heat get good at drafting? It's just a shift. They were terrible, 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 and now they're like the best team.
Well, no, hold on
a
second.
Hold on.
They traded. They were always trading those mid-round picks, and it was the biggest one was Tim James out of the University of Miami in the middle of the first round, because Riley never believed in that. He always believed in playing for right now and getting Dan Majerle. Yeah. Like, he always believed in, what do I need to do to get the bad back of Dan Majerle so I could have a veteran in here? I don't trust young players. And then Wade came into the organization, and he was like, okay, maybe I should start trusting young players.
Yeah, but then Beasley came in, and that was a disastrous draft pick. To answer your question, Chris, they started getting good at drafting players when they started having first-round draft picks. They traded a bunch for those big three. Those were trades. They traded a bunch for Goran Dragic. Pat Riley always undervalued first-round draft picks, and now you have an organization that turns players like Hassan Whiteside and Tyler Johnson into these massive contract players and Duncan Robinson. And you sit back and you ask your question, well, if they can do this with these guys.
Well, this is the part, Stugatz, that makes you feel like a bit embarrassed, I would say, if you were listening to us at any point during the last couple of years and you were questioning whether or not the game has passed Pat Riley by. And I understand he's an old man, and I understand I was just making Biden jokes a second ago. But that old man is responsible. As we sit here today and see the echoes of what leadership can do to a country in terms of dividing it or uniting it, right, and how yesterday felt, the Miami Heat have had one leader for 20 years. He's been Belichickian. He has given birth to a bunch of lifers and loyalists who are at the top of that organization, like Eric Spoelstra, who build, and I'm not going to use the word Mike likes to use here, but who have built something that as an architecture, clearly, whether you're doing it by trading for pieces and are always relevant by going after the Tim Hardaways or the Jimmy Butlers and getting them, you went through a period where you lost a Gordon Hayward, but I'm not sure if he stays healthy, whether maybe Gordon Hayward ends up looking different here than he would have looked anywhere else, because clearly, whether they have to do it through free agents or, okay, bleep it, Never mind. We're going to scrap the philosophy of having positions.
Right.
When these three guys get here, we're going to create positionless basketball. And also, we're going to scrap the philosophy of we don't use our first round picks. We're going to scrap it. And we're going to say, no, we're going to use them and show all of you what we've been doing for the Jimmy Butlers of the world, that you can't notice how they make a leap in terms of improvement because they were already good when they rehabbed Tim Hardaway. We'd already seen him be great. So, okay, he's healthy now. When they brought in Alonzo Mourning, that's the way they did it. They just said, yeah, okay, get us the established name so we don't have to waste the time of waiting for the young player to get good.
They depleted all of their assets in building up that big three, and it was absolutely worth it. They also turned to veterans in because they didn't have the patience to develop young players. Because they had no assets and because all these players left and they were very clearly rebuilding, they had to go.
And Riley's always playing for now. Always. Because he's in his 70s. Yeah. He's always playing for now.
But they had to turn to the G League. And they had to reshape themselves. They were always big game hunters, right? And now they had to rely on their development, and they started doing this with journeymen, guys, second round picks, what Josh Richardson did. And you realize, well, if you could do this with Duncan Robinson, Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, the list goes on and on and on of key contributors that you got seemingly out of nowhere, well, then what can I do with players from Kentucky? And you turn Bam Adebayo into... I mean, he's been incredible the last couple of games, but you turn him into an all-star. Tyler Johnson has his ceilings, one of the best young assets in the league. So
Tyler,
it was interesting.
Hero. Tyler Hero. Yeah. Tyler Johnson, you liked him better than Goran Dragic at one point. You get so hyperventilated and you get so intoxicated by Heat culture and you snort it so much that Tyler Johnson becomes better than Goran Dragic in all your analysis.
I do talk fast.
The Nets agree with Mike, though.
I do. Well, yes. Yeah, Bumpy Johnson is playing over there.
The Heat matched that contract and didn't want to.
Here's why I talk fast and cocainey whenever I talk about the Hurricanes and Heat. Dan interrupts me a lot, so right. I have very tight windows, yes. And he wants to interrupt me even more when I talk about the culture stuff, so I'm going to make a Tom Breeze and a Tyler Johnson occasionally.
That is correct. That's
familiar with those windows.
Let us absolutely allow people to see behind the curtain there. It is absolutely so, and it is one of the many things that makes me annoying around here. I absolutely interrupt everyone around here too much. In my defense, in this one instance, I know how much the people on this Zoom call, never mind the audience, hates when we get cocainey culture, Mike. And so I have to get in there and swing my hippo hips around in order to get him off of it, because I know that no one likes to hear it and there has to be a countermeasure.
But he just explained it in a way where I think we'll probably be more nicer to cocainey Mike because we understand it now. No, be cocainey.
He's been doing this for 10 years. He's been trying to explain. He's a zealot who's trying to explain this to the audience. He's a Scientologist, okay? He believes it, and I happen to believe it too, but as an expert in how tone gets in the way of delivery. I mean, he's had no other job. He's worked here his entire professional life. It's your fault, Dad. It is my fault. It is my fault that he's like this, and he revs, and he starts talking about it, because I recognize the things in my son here that have been my kryptonite for 30 years communicating is that I can't do it without being obnoxious, guy. I'm trying to bump Mike off of Billy hating him more because he's talking about culture again.
I was actually going to ask if we could let Mike finish what he was saying before.
Exactly. Why are we rushing so much?
The Heat fans need it right now. We need it right now. Everyone's freaking out that the bubble was a fluke. We need it.
That one bothers me. If there was a testament to culture, it's the fact that they took the Los Angeles Lakers to 6 in the NBA Finals. But I think right now you have a team, and Eric Spoelstra said it with his preseason comments, we feel like we have a responsibility to win inside of this Jimmy Butler window. It'll be interesting to see what kind of player Jimmy Butler is going to be when he gets back, because that's a guy that pours his heart into every possession. And as you see in certain cases, like with Myles Garrett, this thing does affect your wind for a little bit. Bradley Beal, to me, is very interesting. Bradley Beal has been a model citizen with Washington. That's been the problem here with this. That's why it's been 4 years, and Pat Riley hasn't been able to acquire him. He's not doing the superstar bullshit that you need to get someone like
this. Well, let me ask the shipping container this, because I believe once the Harden news ends up in the news stream, and once you're sitting there hoping and thinking about Giannis, and this has been the settling superstar prize for a long time, I'm sensing a general lack of enthusiasm that Bradley Beal, before we started talking Giannis and Harden, that Bradley Beal would have been someone who would have excited the shipping container. But because now we were talking about Harden and Giannis.
It's a letdown.
That Bradley Beal becomes, oh, that's the guy we've been talking about for a while, but he's on a team that's not any good and he scores a lot. But do we want to give up Tyler Hero, or as Mike likes to call him when he gets cocaine-y, Tyler Johnson for him? Because Heat fans do want to give up Tyler Johnson for him. They don't want to give up Tyler Hero for him.
I'm not certain I like this Bradley Beal guy, the character of Bradley Beal. Like, if you want out, if you want to be, he doesn't want to be a member of the Heat band. Muck it up. Stop being such a good guy. Be James Harden. I don't like. Listen, you got to want to be a part of the culture.
You got to be a jerk.
It doesn't appear that Beal wants to be a part of this. I mean, how about show some effort? Be an ass. I mean,
they've been bad. They're one of the worst teams in the league right now. You need to start making a mess of things. And once he does, then it's time to strike. Bucks fans were all up on the timeline, taking a victory lap when Giannis signs the extension, as they should, by the way. But sports have changed. You sign the extension the way that Bradley Beal did, the way that James Harden did, because it's the smart thing to do. Hell, Deshaun Watson just learned this. He just signed his extension, and he realized, they gave me a no-trade clause with that. I can make a mess, and I can go wherever I want, and I can maximize my money. Bradley Beal did all those things before a pandemic. Great job by his agent. Now make a mess.
You want a guy that seems content and happy making $29 million a year playing on a crappy team? You want that guy? He doesn't want to be great.
Okay, let's back.
He wants to be rich, and I'm good with that. I mean,
no, I like where you're headed with all of this, Stugatz. I'm loving the idea of Heat culture is, hey, go be an asshole and then get here and stop being an asshole. So that's the real formula. That's how you get people. I think that stuff escalated with Harden specifically because the Heat made Goran Dragic do that, man. That's a koala. And you forced a koala to be an asshole in Phoenix. None of us had said, and Brad, well, you're absolutely right when you say Bradley Beal is absolutely being way too professional. Like, knock it off, Beal. If you want to win, go be an asshole.
Thank you. We called Goran adorable at
one point. Adorable, and he was like, it was so weird. It was like seeing it was like seeing an animal you know to be kind, cuddly, and cute all of a sudden become a wolverine or a werewolf. Why is Goran Dragic ripping the Phoenix Suns management? This doesn't make any sense to me in terms of his personality. He's also like a tiny white guy. Like, the tiny white guys don't get hit with that. It's only the black guys who, when they take their power, make a mess. It was all disorienting to see Goran Dragic basically bite the hand that feeds him like a little puppy, like a teacup Maltese enraged, making a pit bull back down.
Now that guy wants to win. I mean that's what winners do.
That's right. He comes from a war-torn place, and he's adorable, and it's probably pretty hard to get to the top of that sport when you're him. So, yes, he's tough. But Bradley Beal, what do you guys think of what I'm saying there? Chris and Billy, what do you think when I say – are you just sort of shrugging your shoulders now on Beal? Is Beal really a disappointment if you only get Beal?
You don't want Beal. Don't waste your people on Beal.
Exactly. Yeah.
Save him. There's going to be another malcontent next season that's going to be better than Beal. Don't put all your chips in the Beal basket right now.
Yeah,
Beal's not showing that he wants to be here. Stugatz is right. If you want to be here, make an effort. But Beal's not trying, so you want to save your chips for later on.
Also, did you have koalas being nice and lovable?
Yeah, koalas are a-holes.
What?
Yeah, it's known. It's a thing. Google it. Are koalas a-holes?
A-holes with herpes.
All right, put it on the poll, Guillermo. Are koalas assholes with herpes at Levitard Show? What is the animal I should have gone with there? I should know that, given how often Ron McGill is on with us and has told us that. But I simply think of a koala as the cutest of the animals. I don't, and maybe Goran Dragic is a koala. He looks cute, but he'll disembowel you. Oh. I did not know that the koala, though. What, can you give me more information on this? I was not aware. I know that McGill has corrected us that it's not right to call him a koala bear because it's redundant, that you're just supposed to call him.
Well, they're not bears.
A koala, because koala bear, there's that too.
It's not redundant if they're not a bear, but they're called koala bears because they look like little stuffed bears, but they're marsupials, I believe.
What?
Okay, so this is getting muddled.
Hey, koalas are bears. I mean, I don't want to hear about it. I don't care what Ron McGill says. I mean, they're a bear. That's right, what a koala is. It's a koala bear.
Put it on the poll, Billy. Are koalas bears? I don't want to hear about it. Because Stugatz is coming today in maximum dismissal Stugatz mode.
I have. Weird.
People are worried about you, and we're worried about you. Is everything okay? I have not had time because of the way things are moving around here.
No, you've been great. Seriously, you've reached out to me.
Well, no, but you're very busy, and people are worried about you because you had to leave the show the other day, and I don't want to put you in a spot where you're revealing too much personal information, but they are curious if everything's okay with you, so I don't know what you want to tell them.
I mean, you know, is everything okay? As of right now, everything is as... I guess it's okay. We're dealing with stuff within our family. I don't want to give too much detail right now because I want to respect my father's wishes. But, yeah, we're dealing with some stuff. And to say I'm okay, no. But doing this and seeing you guys a couple of times this week has really, really helped. I can't say that I'll be here the entire time. I have no idea when I have to leave. But I am okay. And for right now, my family is okay, as good as they can be.
I know that you guys think, incidentally, that there are too often times here in the last few weeks where we pull back the curtain a little too much and let you see a little too much, and you prefer we just do show and be ourselves and sort of allow you to escape and not remind you self-absorbed, narcissistic, navel-gazing so much about ourselves. We'll get to our continuing feud with Greg Cody in a second because it's getting a little bit out of hand. I don't know whether Chris and I owe him an apology or not, but as we build this out and you are seeing us talk to you directly and we can get in and out of here because we've got so much going on in terms of trying to build a company, and it's totally overwhelming because we really don't have a partner yet and things don't happen until there are partners. But I will say, without betraying any confidences, that our sponsors and Stugatz doing sales around what he's got going on at home, because he's our sales department right now, there are some sponsors real interested in coming to the rescue because they believe in the spirit of this thing is out to sea. They need help. And let's not wait for sort of budget meetings and everything else that needs to go on in a normal quarter that's not the pandemic. Let's help out our partners and be real sponsors. And Stugatz is dealing with that as we're introducing you to our CEO. Mike, is that out today? Because I want you guys to get to know this man who is a great white shark of business. We are not businessmen. The best we've got is a businessman in Stugatz, and we need to not be doing that in our next incarnation. But the guy we got is a business maker. He is a visionary. He is the most powerful man in sports across a decade that was ESPN's most profitable time ever. And this man is helping us build the business, but it ain't built yet. We got people lined up outside the door wanting to get into this party, but we're just starting to build the business. And today, over many episodes, Mike, I don't know which days you're doing this, but we're introducing you to our CEO to better explain, in the middle of all this that we're doing, coming on a new dawn after that inauguration, because it was important for us in a pirate radio form to be able to talk to you this week and tell you the story of what this business is going to become. Where and when can they find the South Beach Sessions? That's going to be over several episodes. I would tell the Shipping Container, you guys should listen to this too. Whittingham edited it, and I heard part two last night, and I'm like, God damn, I am proud of how this man is articulating what it is we're building for our listeners right from inside it for the first time, because he hasn't given interviews. I have not given interviews. We wanted to tell you first what this is, and he's going to tell you in South Beach Sessions over several episodes. When does the first one drop, Mike?
The first one's already out. So search out South Beach Sessions or the Levitard and Friends Network. If you subscribe to the Levitard and Friends Network, you get all the offerings with one subscription. If you want the individual properties, do us a favor, subscribe to both. Let's game the system. Part one is out with John Skipper right now. By the way, Angel Resso, a graphic designer, brand new artwork for South Beach Sessions. Looks really cool. Part two will be out tomorrow morning. Then parts three and four will drop next week.
Wow. Can't wait to see what we're doing.
I think a lot of people
does it cover benefits in this part?
There are a lot of questions you guys have.
What about stock options?
Well, here, help me out with this, because this is so real. This is so real in terms of sloppy. We're normally sloppy by design, but you throw us in the business realm and we're just sloppy. Like, this is not a place that we should exist. It really isn't. But Mike, what do you want the people to know about? Because you have a lot of questions, but we're also bothering our professional CEO because he's about to roll out a company and he's emailing us in the middle of the night. Hey, guys, like, we're not announcing a mean. What did you guys do there? And he doesn't have time to be listening to the show right now. So we need to explain to him, no, you don't understand. Amin just sort of tore up his contract and came. Nobody gave him a job. Or just Amin saying, no, I see what that is. I want the symbolism of I'm tearing up my contract. I ride with these guys. Like, I ride into open seas toward freedom with these guys because, look, they've got Skipper. And Skipper's saying, well, we're not ready to hire people yet. And me and Mike are arguing, no, you need to understand. We need to take Amin in this circumstance.
Like, I got
to
close another deal now? I mean,
To pay for Amin. Right, that's correct. And we don't know what we're paying Amin.
It's very clear to me why this isn't the model.
Isn't the way to do it.
Yeah, very clear why you usually get an infrastructure in place and then you take care of the content. Because we have this audience, thanks to people subscribe to the feeds and we're still putting out content, we're building it from the inside out, which is really cool in terms of maintaining positive momentum. It's great when you see the screen caps of us being number one, but it's also terrible in terms of corporate hierarchy.
But let me explain to the audience, as we're really letting them see inside the underbelly of this thing in a way that I know is annoying you sometimes, not unlike Mike annoys you with cocaine-y culture guy. I can annoy you throughout the history of doing this show with over explanations because I'm always trying, and it's annoying. I know it's annoying.
Yeah, you've been doing it a lot.
No, but Mike, I don't want to be doing it. Okay, but
you can stop.
Okay, but my explanation is that there are many people listening to this who weren't always on the inside, and the first time they got here, they felt on the outside, and they hated our show for a long time because they didn't understand it. And they found it helpful, although they don't remember it now because they have the information on all the inside jokes. They found it helpful then to have someone who didn't want to be explaining all the jokes, explaining all of the jokes. I hate doing it.
I understand. And you could do that with the jokes and contextually with things when things pop up organically within the show. I think even from the outside, people understand what the construct is right now with your free agency and it being widely reported. I think they understand what the deal is.
Okay, so all of that said, just one final time then, I'll stop and call me on it, like do a buzzer or something, because it's a bad habit I have that is meant to try to be inclusive so we don't box you out, because this show can be an acquired taste if you hate it a lot at the beginning and just quit it, as opposed to hating it, and then you understand it, and then you like it, and then you come with us during free agency.
That's the sound, yeah.
Okay, that's the sound. So this is the backstory I want the audience to have here, even though, again, another local hour I've ruined by yammering.
The sound again.
Okay. Do you want me or not, after that inauguration, to explain to the audience the specifics of how we arrived here?
You do that so much in the South Beach Sessions. So go ahead and check out the South Beach Sessions with John Skipper. Part one is out right now. Part two will be out tomorrow. 3 and 4 drop next week. It's a really difficult edit for one Chris Whittingham. Welcome aboard. Threw him in the deep end.
Did he mention me at all? Or?
Well, he mentioned, we talked about actually that he wanted to get rid of you. Oh. We talked about that over, I don't know which episode he made a phone call that I realized that it's as obvious a time. Like, whatever it is that you get accused of over 20 years of coattails as my most valued partner, who I love during a difficult time, who's my family, who's my friend.
Yeah.
I didn't realize one of the first conversations that I had with Skipper was him trying to assassinate you and put Bomani Jones in that seat. And that I, in 15 seconds, in a conversation where I looked around in an alley and felt like there was a mafioso hit, I was like, wait a minute, did I just say no to the most powerful man in sports? Did I just say no on a possible deal-breaking situation on everything that's here? Because they needed to fit Bomani into the cap of what it is that they do budget-wise and stuff. Did I just nuke a deal by by falling on my Stugatz grenade.
Also, if you want to hear some more explaining about our history and how we found ourselves here, there's a cool mystery crate that's a nice little supplement piece. All the questions that aren't addressed in the John Skipper parts might be addressed in the mystery crate episode that drops this week, where it's an Ask Me Anything that Mark, formerly of Reddit, the former moderator of Reddit, collected a bunch of questions from our audience, and Dan gets to do this for the very first time. It's the first interview he's ever done about these things. That will also drop tomorrow.
And Stugatz is getting left out of some of these things.
No, that's okay.
No, Stugatz has stupidity.
I have Chris Sims coming on stupidity, and I have the new Jets head coach that Mike likes very much coming on next week.
You got Rob Saleh?
I got Rob. That's his name?